This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, the music selection.
Well, the music selections are the kind of music that the British play at the changing of the guards. So we've got a changing of the guards on Monday. I thought we'd give it a little British flavor today.
All right, so Sandy, where have all the doctors gone? America is facing monumental shortages of physicians. And let me read a little bit of this and let's go into it. You know, as a physician, this is from a physician. I get this question, and this is in the AARP. As a physician, I get the question from friends and family all the time, and for most of my professional life, I was able to refer them to medical colleges, medical colleagues. A simple phone call was all it took to get someone an appointment within a reasonable amount of time. But no longer. This is from a physician. The average wait for new patients to see physicians is 26 days, and that's for mostly healthy people. In a medical emergency, the situation can become even more frightening. 22% of acutely ill patients, 65 or older, who sought medical attention had to wait 6 days or more for an appointment, according to a 2021 survey of the Commonwealth Fund.
You don't have to read that. Well, you don't have to read that for listeners to know that they can't get appointments with doctors. I mean, it's an experience we've all had. You know, you want to go see a cardiologist. You call up and they say, well, you can come in March of 2026. We've got, busy that day? No, there's clearly a shortage. And I was for 20 years on the board.
So how do we get here?
Well, I was for 20 years on the board of the Medical College of Wisconsin here in Milwaukee. And, you know, medical school is a very expensive venture. Even if you go to a state medical school, you can expect to spend several hundred thousand dollars to complete a medical education. And so, you know, unless you're a person of great means, you're going to go into material debt, student loan debt, to finance your way through medical school. And then when you get out, you become a doctor. But becoming a doctor today is a much different thing than it used to be. So almost every doctor now is an employee of a hospital, whether they're in a private practice, in an office someplace, seeing what seems to be their own patients or not. They've all been snapped up and acquired by large medical organizations. And their life is now much different than it used to be. They're asked to see 30 and 40 people a day, and to have 40 appointments in a day is to be under the gun constantly, to be doing something which requires that you check boxes so that you can be sure you can get paid by the insurance company, so that we now have a process that our doctor has to follow that kind of guides them in what kind of service they provide to you based on whether it's covered or not by insurance and what kind of boxes they have to check in order to make sure that it is covered. So our medical care, you know, what's happened to our medical system is there are kind of two groups of people who are getting screwed by it, the patients and the physicians. And the physicians have noticed this. I mean, the other thing you'll notice if you're going to the doctor at all is that many of our physicians are foreign-born and even foreign-trained because of this shortage. we find that we have to reach out to find the doctors necessary to staff our hospitals, and that reach sometimes goes all the way to India and to other countries that have advanced medical systems and advanced medical training. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, this is evidence of the fact that our medical system is broken, and the doctors are responding to it.
Here's something that somebody has to explain this to me. So, Cuba, if you want to become a doctor, it's free all the way up. They pay for it all. Okay? You go to school. If you're a person who has the capacity to become that, and here it is, we condemn nations like Cuba, but yet they seem to understand the importance of making sure that you have as many doctors as you can get, even though they're a poor nation.
In fact, Cuba, which is really a very, very poor nation, in large part because of the way we strangled it with our embargo, but they have very well trained doctors and a fairly good medical system. The fact is that in most countries where post high school education is supported by the state and is actually paid for. So, and the same is true. And if you go to school in Europe, in many countries, you can go to medical school if you qualify and get entrance to it. You will not be going into student loan debt in order to support yourself because there won't be heavy tuition to pay.
So, you know, Sandy, most of us believe that doctors are wealthy. All doctors are wealthy. My best friend in high school went to medical school, became a cardiologist, and he used to tell me, and he wound up going to Walter Reed, Sandy, at 40 years old. He joined the military. At 40 years old, he's a medical doctor because the cost of continuing education was prohibitive for him. So he joined the military and got training at Walter Reed Hospital for continuing education. He then told me that he wasn't making a lot of money as a cardiologist until he was like 35 years in, you know, and then became a head of a cardiology wing somewhere. But I think people have this misconception that every doctor is waxing rich, Sandy.
Well, no, that's not the case. And you can look at the different specialties, and there's a wide range of average incomes depending on what specialty you go into. And of course, our country needs every specialty because, you know, if you have skin cancer, you need to see a dermatologist. You can't see an ophthalmologist. Our medical system is broken, and the victims of it include the patients and the physicians and the nurses. I mean, these people in the nursing profession, in the medical profession, are being asked to work very, very hard under conditions that are very hard to bear. There's a burnout rate in the medical profession that's very high. And compensation needs to be relative to, one, the barriers to entry. I mean, if it costs you $200,000 to go to medical school, that's a big barrier to entry. There's not a lot of people who want to undertake $200,000 of debt in order to get themselves trained to do something which they aren't that certain about whether they'll like it or not. And if they go talk to doctors today to find out whether they'll like it, they'll find out that doctors are rapidly becoming one of the unhappiest professions amongst all professions.
So let me ask you then, how does it make sense? I don't know of any hospital. I go out to Frederick in Milwaukee, and every hospital is expanding, Sandy. They've got all the latest technology. I don't know of any hospital that I walk into, and I think there's a pauper's situation going on. Beautiful buildings. Brand new, all of them being updated and upgraded for the most part, Sandy. All the new technology. Then how is it possible? Where is that money coming from?
Well, it's coming from Medicare and Medicaid and the you know it's coming from the general you know the fact is that 20% of our GDP is devoted to medical care, which is an absurdly high number based on the relative number in other developed countries, because we have allowed our medical care to become very expensive, and we've allowed ourselves to build all of these great edifices with at great expense, and then to bear the cost of that in the insurance system that we have created. I mean, our medical system is broken. And yes, we have the most sophisticated medical service to provide to people, but we don't have enough providers in terms of physicians, and nor do we have really good access to it. As you know, the way we compensate the physicians through our insurance program leaves us in a position where the users, the potential patients, each of us, is afraid to go to see the doctor because they can't afford those visits out of the deductibles in their health insurance program, or they can't get in to see them for the weeks and months that it would otherwise take to get an appointment, which prompts them all to go to the emergency room where they can get service immediately, but at great expense.
You know, Sandy, so many bankruptcies are because of medical costs. And people don't want to lose their homes, and they don't want to lose. So there have been ongoing efforts to try to curb this, Sandy. It didn't just get this way, and they haven't been successful. Why?
Well, because the status quo is very hard to change. And the status quo is represented by all kinds of people. There are the workers who work in the system, and there are the status quo system, and our status quo system involves big medical insurance companies and big hospitals who rely on the big medical insurance companies to receive their payments. And so, you know, we've got a huge medical system, 20% of our GDP that was poorly designed to start with, and now has all kinds of stakeholders in it who make it very hard to change it.
Yeah, you know, that's tragic, Sandy, but you know, there will be a come to Jesus moment unless some of these things are rectified. You know, baby boomers are aging, and there's more and more need of doctors, and we've got to find a way to fix it. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you, Sandy. TikTok banning up next. Your thoughts on whether or not TikTok is going to survive on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. Sandy, before we talk about TikTok, Mary is a holdover from Tulsa, and she wants to talk about the healthcare and the doctors. Good morning to you, Mary. How are you?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. So, yeah, we are witnessing an evolution of medicine. There's an organization called EvoMed, or people can Google Evolution of Medicine or Go EvoMed. There's a Let's see, it's promotive of functional and lifestyle medicine, which puts the power of our health right in our own hands, you know, when we take care of our diet and our exercise, you know, sleep, stress reduction. And so there's an army of healthcare practitioners, like integrative trained doctors, naturopaths, chiropractors, and those on the natural health path that are there to help us. What we need is for insurance to be able to back this support of our health. Thanks for your address of this.
Hey, Mary, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to?
Well, that's one of the problems with our healthcare system is that there's no one in it, in the business of it, that has an incentive to promote wellness. Okay, wellness is a living a life that essentially avoids the need for doctors and avoids the need for hospitalization and avoids the need for drugs, because you've lived a life that minimizes the probability that you'll realize the kind of illness or problems that require it. And so you'd think that if we were really interested in our population, we would be promoting wellness in every way. But the fact is that if you're a pharmacologist, I mean, if you're a pharmaceutical company, you want to sell drugs. So you want to chronic illness is perfect.
Yes.
You need to take the pill every day.
Yes.
And maybe you'll feel okay, but you're not going to get cured. And the same is true with respect to hospitals. They really are interested in hospitalization. They aren't not interested in it, and the doctors aren't interested in having medical visits. And so yeah, I mean, Mary's right. But one of the reasons that insurance doesn't cover it is that even the insurers aren't that interested in wellness, because ultimately insurance companies make more money when premiums for insurance are higher, not lower. And so we need to look at our medical system and really revisit how it's organized and how it's run. And I'm afraid that it's going to be very difficult to accomplish. And I fear that the first step that will be taken will simply be to deny medical care to many people who need it based on a conservative government deciding that that's a way to cut costs, when in fact the real way to cut costs is to redesign our system, to rebuild into it incentives that will move it in the right direction in terms of costs, efficiency, and public wellness.
You know, Sandy, a couple of things before we switch over to TikTok. I'm a guy who has four doctors. People see me, they say, hey, you're healthy, you look healthy. Sandy, I feel healthy. I feel healthier than I have at almost any point in my life, but I have four doctors, four specialists. I'm one guy. And so, you know, I see them, and I have Medicare, which is a blessing. I don't have to pay for that out of my pocket. But let's look at people, Sandy, who aren't even don't have Medicare.
Yeah.
How does it make sense, Sandy, in a nation that in between when people are young, if they wind up and they don't have a job that pays for their health insurance, that they can't afford to see a doctor until they get to Medicare? By that time, all matter of things can be wrong. How does that make sense, Sandy?
Well, things don't make sense. You look at what's happening in the world. So one of the new drugs that's a wonder drug, Ozempic, and the ones that operate like it to fight obesity. Obesity is the source of a whole bunch of chronic health problems, diabetes type 2, heart vascular problems. So if you could actually cure obesity at a low price, you'll be better off. The system could well be better off because a lot of high price problems can be avoided. But there's a struggle now to see whether Ozempic can be covered, or the Ozempic or drugs
Medicare
like it will be covered by Medicare or be covered by insurance. Well, why is that? I mean, here's a drug that might actually fight other kinds of very expensive chronic problems, and it's difficult to get it covered.
It's a wonder drug.
Yeah, but if you want to get if you need to have an MRI, you'll certainly have that covered. If you need to have some radical surgery, that will be covered too, but not something like this. I mean, so we, like I said, our healthcare system is broken, and there's a lot of people lined up in Washington who have a stake in it, who aren't interested in seeing it fixed. They're interested in tweaking it. They're interested in doing the things to it which will feather their own nest. But unfortunately, we aren't moving very rapidly in the direction of fixing it. The last one to spend a lot of political capital on the medical system, Barack Obama, suffered the slings and arrows of it and is still suffering slings and arrows.
And, you know, something that came out this week, they're finally cutting or that red dye that they know has been causing all of this trouble for people and children forever. They're finally banning it, but it doesn't start until 2027. It makes no sense.
So, you know, back to TikTok, I can tell you that the Supreme Court just issued its ruling this morning.
Hold the thought, Sandy. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you. He already stole my thunder.
Well, you said we were going to move to TikTok.
We're going to move to TikTok on the Earl Ingram Show.
It's the way the world moves forward. TikTok.
Yeah.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com. All right. Something about the clowns. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, are you there? I can't hear you. Calvin, you got him? Sandy?
Okay, there we go.
Where are the clowns? They're already here. What is the...
Yeah, send in the clowns. It's the punchline of this whole, all this series of music. This is a Changing of the Guard tune, but it's Send in the Clowns.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great tune. I mean, I don't care how many times I hear that. That's one of those things, and especially with that brass, it really was great. But anyway... TikTok, Sandy, all the talk and bluster about doing away with TikTok because the Chinese were somehow, you know, infiltrating the American people. And this was such a big deal, and they worked it out to be something that had to be done. And Donald Trump and others decided no. Why?
Well, you know, Donald Trump has indicated he's seriously having second thoughts. The Supreme Court just issued its decision this morning saying that they would allow the law to go into effect. The law goes into effect on Sunday.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, so but the law going into effect requires that it be, in fact, implemented now. And Trump has announced that his intent is to try and forestall the notion that it would have to either be sold or shut down, and is going to try to negotiate a solution to it. So, and I'll be astounded, just as I was going to be astounded if the government shut down several weeks ago with respect to Congress at loggerheads, I'll be astounded if TikTok is shut down. It's got 170 million users. It's one of the most popular social media. The whole notion that a government can use social media for its own benefit is clear. They can, but it's also clear they don't have to own it to exercise the power to use it. So Russia has regularly been accused of using social media, using Facebook, using TikTok, using all of the social media for its own uses by dint of how they load it with their own version of social media. And so, like I said, I'm from Missouri on this one, and I'll be very astounded if TikTok shuts down on Sunday or if it shuts down on any day.
What about the demand that they sell it to an American owner?
Well, you know, that could play into the hands of Elon Musk. I mean, there was speculation that I thought was born out of some fact that Elon Musk might be in line to buy it, because I think it's a very profitable social media, whereas he bought X and found out it didn't have the value of the $43 billion that he paid for it. I think TikTok has a great deal of value.
Well, so when you look at the Chinese and you look at all those platforms.
Well, look, the head of TikTok, I've forgotten his name, he has a Chinese name, has been invited to the inauguration and is likely to attend it. So the Trump administration has invited the head of TikTok to the inauguration. I think there's every reason to believe that it will not shut down.
You know, Sandy, it's another one of those things where the American people are being led around like sheep. And so we heard that this is going to happen. The Chinese are spying on the American people, and we can't have it, and it's wreaking havoc. And then you turn around and say, oh, well, okay, well, we don't mind. They can continue to spy on the American people, but we can't shut it down. Well, I mean, man, we're just Americans, man. We expect some truth sometime.
Well, I think that we've gotten so used to this process of being spun out by politicians about who our enemy is and why it is we need to expend a lot of money on our Defense Department, as well as be very worried. And so there for the last 8 years, it's been good politics to be a China hawk and to talk about all the ways in which China is an extreme danger to us. Well, then if it's such an extreme danger, here's this social media that's owned by China operating here in the country. Maybe we should do something about it. And I think, to be honest with you, this is, again, a situation of form over substance. The reality of the nature of the problem in social media that the TikTok is for the United States is no worse than any of the other social media, because social media is easily exploited by those who want to manipulate public opinion. And you don't need to own it to participate in it. So I've thought all along, quite frankly, that this is just politicians doing something because they can do it and because they can then pound their breasts and declare themselves to be accomplishing something.
You know, Sandy, it's right after, Facebook and others have decided to take off the governing you know, the training wheels of their platforms. And then you see this. So really, they're not going to do what is necessary to control what happens on these platforms?
Well, I've talked about it before. I think controlling the stuff on the platform is very difficult to the extent that it's done by the government. It is also somewhat difficult if it's done by the owners. But I think if the public is given a cause of action that would allow private plaintiff lawyers to police it for falsehoods, for malicious material, et cetera, that you could have a process of policing speech in much the same manner that we police it now through libel and slander laws. And so, you know, I think ultimately we'll come to a solution here, but it is a complicated area, the area of controlled speech. And if you own the platform and you start dictating what it is that people can say, it's much more likely that you would then be held liable for what the things that are said on it that you have allowed to be said on it, because you have decided you're going to play a role in approving what it is that gets said on your platform.
Well, you know, Sandy, that clearly we know that it does cause harm to children and young people. And there's no question that that's the case. But is it that the onus is on the parent to control their child and not so much on the society?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, the fact is that social media is much more available and has a much more potentially subliminal as well as indelible effect on us by when we watch it, rather than as compared to, for instance, reading books or the written word or even the normal spoken word. So it is a new kind of medium in terms of how it deals with us psychologically and educationally. And so, you know, I think we're going to have to figure out how to get our arms around it so that it isn't as harmful as it apparently can be. And part of that obviously will have to be the vigilance of families and the vigilance of supervision. And some of it's going to have to be figuring out a way to make sure that what it is that gets presented to us has some veracity and has some boundaries associated with decency. And I just believe that that'll end up being private plaintiffs. Conduct, which will force the owners of these platforms to police what it is that goes on.
You know, Sandy, you say private plaintiff. So individuals taking on, you know, that's David taking on Goliath.
The fact is that plaintiffs, to the extent that they can get a lot of money, I mean, you know, Mr. Gruber, who we all know about because of his advertising, is a plaintiff's lawyer who sues big companies and obtains judgments on behalf of injured individuals. So it defends, represents David against Goliath. And that's the whole principle of personal injury law. And the reason why I think it could be profitable with respect to and effective with respect to public media, social media, is because class actions, because everybody who watches it, all the hits that you can count up on the social media scene are affected by whatever it is that's being said on that site. And so it's pretty easy to figure out who the group is that was damaged by it, to the extent that it's malicious, false, slanderous, indecent, outside the bounds of what is acceptable to the courts of America with respect to indecent conduct.
So, Sandy, I will say this. Class actions, for the most part, don't really benefit the class. And, you know, very seldom.
Here what I'm talking about is, yes, benefiting the class by shutting it down, right? So, I mean, you can change conduct with it. You might not benefit the people who watched it.
Who have been damaged.
Well,
their children.
No, they won't. But the next people won't be damaged. I mean, the government isn't compensating the people who would be damaged. They're just stopping the damage from happening when they control it. And that's what would happen here as well.
855-752-4842 is the number. You know, Sandy Williams, my co-host. And, you know, Sandy, certainly the monopolies in these areas, you know, those are the ones that we see, the big cats. But the smaller cats, I mean, they're kind of doing damage themselves. And that goes, and that flies under the radar.
By that, you're talking about people on social media?
I'm talking about many of the people who have, you know, platforms and other things. I guess they can't be charged with anything because people don't have to go there. Is that how that works?
Well, that's how it works in social media, too. You don't have to go. You can go to TikTok, and you don't have to go to the sites on TikTok that are potentially harmful. They do present you with the opportunity to do it, and you have to turn the opportunity down. I'm just saying this is a complicated area because the path to government censorship and government speech control is a slippery one. And so it's one which most civil liberty lawyers are very concerned about and are concerned about even starting on that path.
So the amazing thing about this is Donald Trump initially said he wanted it shut down. But then later on, he turned around and said, well, they helped me get elected. I was able to. Sandy, you can't make this stuff up.
No, well, he makes it up. No. But the fact is that apparently it did help him get elected because he used it. His people, at least, or he came to understand the extent and the breadth of reach of things that are on social media like TikTok that include the Rogan show and other things
right.
that are available there and allowed him to reach out to a lot of young men ages 18 to 30.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit about Hamas and Israel, Sandy, and what appears to be, you know, a peace that may stick. 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you send in the clowns.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You know, Sandy, I can listen to that all day. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You can text us. Sandy, the music.
Yeah, send in the clowns. This is I picked music that was British music for the changing of the guards, but this last piece was too good to resist. Played by the guards, Welsh guards, but they're playing Send in the Crowns. You've got 4 years you can play this, actually.
Don't remind us. So Sandy, does it look like this peace deal is going to happen?
I think it does, yeah. I think the Knesset, there's just a couple of steps left. The Supreme Court of Israel and the Knesset have to approve it, but the Security Council Committee took early action this morning and approved it. So, yeah, I think it will. And I think that it obviously was based on a lot of difficult diplomacy. Interestingly, Donald Trump has already taken credit for this, saying it's accomplished even before he got in the White House. You know, today's an interesting day. Another Actually, something that was just announced that is we're going to be reading about for a while is that Biden has issued an opinion, not an executive order, saying that the 28th Amendment, the Equal Rights Amendment, has been officially ratified, he believes. The sufficient number of states have ratified it. The question is whether they all ratified it within the time period that was set up for the ratification within their own state actions. But we're going to now see a Supreme Court action, I'm quite sure, very quickly to try and figure out whether, in fact, the 28th Amendment is now a part of the Constitution, which, if it is, could have a huge impact on a variety of issues, including abortion and including a number of others.
So what is the 28th Amendment?
It's equal protection with respect to gender, et cetera. It has sort of potentially powerful impact.
You know, Sandy, the next time you and I meet on these airways, Donald Trump would be president.
Yep.
And
I'm going down to Mar-a-Lago on Monday. that'll be the day, I'll tell you.
You know, all the time, all I could think about doing all of this time leading up to this was all of these people going down to Mar-a-Lago. And never before in our history have we seen anything like that. All people, even in broad daylight, Sandy.
Yeah, it's unseemly. I mean, it's influence peddling in broad daylight. You know, we've got eight of the richest men in the world who are going to be right there on the Diaz at the inauguration. This is unseemly without anybody standing up and declaring it to be entirely unseemly. And, you know, we can go back to Versailles and what it was during Louis's term in France, when things were so decadent and controlled by the wealthy that it led to the French Revolution. But really, we've got Versailles now, and it's Mar-a-Lago. And it's a specter. You know, the Mar-a-Lago is in every way a palace, and we've got someone who wants to be king occupying it and his courtiers currying his favor.
You know, to Joe,
every day.
To Joe Biden's credit, part of his farewell speech was about the oligarchs. And they're here. And it's happened. Be perceptive. Be aware of it. Because it's here. That's what he was saying.
Yeah, wake up, America. I mean, the thing is, it's theater. We're watching something that could be a TV show, and it might be appealing to many people, just like The Apprentice was appealing. But we're watching a TV show unfold with the rich and the famous as its stars. And it's not the real housewives of Washington, D.C. It's the real oligarchs of Broad Street. And
well, you know,
I
Sandy,
think go ahead. I think it's a big problem, you know, that we need to nip in the bud, or it's going to get away from
us.
Well,
the fact that it's here, the fact that it's happening is the thing that is still hard for me to wrap my arms around. As a young man, and, you know, as I've grown up, never ever thought this could happen in this nation. Many of us thought it could not happen, yet it did.
Well, you know, when we had an active news media, we had nightly news that everyone watched and understood and kind of put faith in. When we had newspapers that had well-funded journalists who would go out and uncover all this information, this would have all been written up in a way that would have caused us to all be quite worried about what was going on. But we don't have that kind of process now. What we have is theater, and we're watching it.
Hey, Sandy, thank you as always, man. Have a great weekend. I'll see you in a couple days. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin, for another great week. And thank you more than anything else to the listening audience. Up next, Jane Matinier, Greg Bach Matinier on air. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.